episode 6 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about game classifications, European-style games versus American-style games, and mass-market ones versus designer ones. But first, let's go off-topic for some news, announcements, and feedback.
Yeah, so we have, well, big news. Just got back from a cruise. Ooh. Yeah, so Sydney and I were checking out a cruise to decide where we were going to get married, when we were going to get married, all that sort of thing. So that's all set and done. We have a date.
Oh, my God.
Not going to announce it here.
Congrats.
I know. Top secret for the moment. Not really top secret. I just figured we should tell a few more people, like, you know, our parents.
Right.
Before putting
before
it on
the internet.
Yeah. So that's the big news for me anyway. You guys have anything cool that's happened in the last week?
I wish I did.
All right. So Josh is born. Got it.
Yep.
My chicks are going to hatch on Thursday.
Yes. Kitty is sitting on eggs.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. I have an incubator upstairs.
With chicks inside of it.
Well, they're eggs now. Yeah.
They're going to hatch when?
Thursday.
Oh, my God. Can we, like, come over after work and see them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe next week we'll have a chick on the podcast. Yeah. But you don't have them that long,
they stick around. Yeah. They're going to go back to the farm.
All right. Well, maybe we'll play a game with them beforehand. See what happens.
little tokens on the board. Hey, I wasn't there. It's moved.
They are a token and they eat tokens. So anything small enough, they'll just pick that right
up. It'll make it really exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. I like little baby chicks. They're cute.
They are.
So in other news, starting two new off-topic segments that I'm going to try to do on a regular basis. First is games I ordered, bought, kickstarted, or just recently received.
Yeah, because Chris does a lot of those things.
Yeah, and I'm like, if I do it on the podcast, I can see there's a problem, and then maybe I can fix the problem.
Right.
Yeah, so since the last podcast, and this may not be a complete list, but I ordered Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy, so we're going to play through those. Mm-hmm. Risk Legacy is the earliest of the Legacy things, but you were talking about how much you guys like Risk, so I'm like, all right, this is good. Let's play Risk Legacy.
Nice.
Pandemic Legacy, because it's the most talked about Legacy game. Seafall is the next one, and that's actually in my pre-ordered list.
Okay.
So we'll have all the Legacy games, and then
that was the one I ran to at Gen Con, and they were like, sold out within 5 seconds.
Yes. They've had like 50 copies or something, and it sold out even before
anyone walked in.
Yeah. So have a copy of that coming.
Nice.
Games I've ordered in the last week. Star Trek Ascension expansions.
Ooh.
So Star Trek Ascension, we played it at Gen Con.
It was epic.
It was like a 6.5 hour game.
Oh, yeah.
So the expansions add the Cardassians.
Didn't feel like it, though. It was
fun. Yeah. And Kitty, we'll get you into this game.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's... Well, we'll get to that when we talk about our game of today segment coming right after this. But yeah, so they're adding Cardassians and Ferengi. So we can play a 5-player game, which should be no longer than 14 hours.
Oh, brilliant.
All right.
Yeah, should be good.
I'll clear my weekend.
Yeah. Just mark it off the calendar. It's funny, though, because I have a lot of friends that are like, oh, when are we going to play this? I'm like, all right, dedicate a Saturday and come over and we'll play it.
Starting at 7 a.m.
Yep, 7 a.m. It's going until 11 p.m. 7 to 11.
I'd like to see you get up before 7. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, we'll give you, if you haven't seen Star Trek Ascension, it's a game by Gale Force 9. Essentially, it's very, very thematic. And it makes you feel like you're playing... The three basic races are Federation, Klingons, and Romulans.
Yes.
And each one plays very unique to their style, to their gameplay. Yes. It makes you feel like you're part of these guys. So
big board, cool miniatures.
Yeah. Well, really no board, bro, right? Whoa, it's like a board that generates itself with like paths and planets and circles and stuff.
I'm
so
very excited.
Yeah, every time the board is different. I also ordered a game called Gloomhaven, which is kind of a Legacy type game. It's tactical, semi-cooperative. So you're working together to defeat the scenario, but you all have your own goals And those goals carry over from one game to a next, and your equipment carries over, and you have cards, and people can, you know, level up, and your character has satisfied his life goals, so he retires, and a new character comes in. Apparently, the box weighs like 30 pounds or something, because there's so many different cards and story aspects.
So you know
it.
A game's good, how heavy it is.
Exactly. So I'm like, all right, I gotta grab it. So looking forward to that one, November-ish, that should be coming. Mm-hmm. Cry Havoc and Terraforming Mars, I've mentioned before, that should actually be arriving in the next week or so.
I'm a big Mars junkie, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it should be really cool.
Yeah.
And then let's see what else. I talked about Seafall. So those are games I've ordered.
Right.
Now games I've kickstarted in the last week.
Oh my God.
First, Chimera Station. Or Chimera Station, depending on how you say it.
Chimera?
Chimera.
Yeah, could be I would Chimera. Say Chimera.
I'm pretty sure that's a Chimera.
But it's definitely. A CH. Why would that be K?
Because it's Greek.
Yeah. The Greeks. I swear to God.
Just making things difficult for you, Chris.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's an alien worker placement game. So you're building a space station, right. And your aliens are all competing with each other. And what you're trying to do is, I mean, it's your standard worker placement, but they're aliens, so they can mutate. So you can put different mutations on your aliens, and they're kind of like stackable pieces.
That makes sense with the Chimera name, yeah.
Yep. So as you do that, the actions that you place these mutated workers on can become better because your workers have claws. So the claws will scare off other workers, and you don't have to worry about those guys, you know, blocking your action. Or you have plants, you know, plant components so that you don't have to worry about feeding your aliens. So there's a lot of really cool aspects to that. So that's it looked nice. Cool. I
almost sounds Pokemon-esque, but maybe it's more of just upgrading that particular alien rather than it evolving to something completely different.
It's kind of, well, it's definitely not Pokemon, but there's some cool, it's just a kind of a neat mechanic to it, I think, for sure. So I'm looking for it. Again, I'm a sucker. I watched a couple of videos and gameplay videos. I'm like, all right,
let's gotta be careful, Chris.
No.
I know.
How long is this segment?
We're running long. I only have a half a dozen more. Tiny Epic Galaxies expansion. I love the Tiny Epic series of games. In fact, I have three of them sitting right in front of me because I plan on making you guys play them in the very near future. One Night Ultimate Alien. Is also one I'm grabbing. It's on the same line as like One Night Werewolf and One Night Vampire. Right. And they're all compatible, so just another one to add on there.
Nice.
Card Rogue. This one I kind of just stumbled upon on Kickstarter, and I really liked the Kickstarter video. There's like a lot of paper stick things.
Oh, I saw
around.
That one. Yeah, yeah, it was really innovative. Yeah, yeah. It was like,
and I'm a huge fan of the game, of the computer game Rogue, right. Which is a hardcore, when you die, random dungeon, trying to figure things out. And this guy like really is a fan of that game. And he's like, I wanted to create a card game that emulated that.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I will back you. And let's see, there's others that I've kickstarted that are further back, but I'll talk about those as they arrive.
Okay.
So, first of all, I want to thank a few people for reviews. So we have a review. Ladybugs Fly left us a review.
Oh, wow. Just like someone we don't even know.
I might know her a little bit.
Really, just a little bit.
But
just met them once or something.
Met them once, yeah. Matt K. Also left us a review. And, oh darn, there was a third one of someone we actually don't know.
I'm pulling it up now.
We're finding it now. Well, she's looking for that. We also got some feedback from Ray
Spider
on her Facebook. Spider Fiend. Yes.
Go Spider Fiend.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Yep. I have a suspicion I know who that is.
Okay.
So Spider Fiend is...
don't tell.
Yeah, not going to say anything. Then we also have some comments on our Facebook page.
Brilliant.
Ray commented to our, you know, what's fun in games, and his comment was, he thinks where some people feel that winning is the best part of the game, for him, he always felt like thinking a problem out was the best part of any game. So,
someone thinking you're kind of...
Yeah, it's like, let's solve this problem. Let's figure out, you know...
Because I think me and Kitty still don't understand this idea.
No, winning is everything.
Winning is everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and now to our newest segment, speaking of winning is everything, the game of today. So we've mentioned this before. Usually before the podcast, we like to play a game. Just kind of gets us in the mood. So we figured, you know, let's spend a few minutes talking about the game we just played.
Right.
And in this one, we played the Star Trek deck building game. It's an older game. It came out in about 5 years ago. There's an expansion for it, and then there's an original generation or original Star Trek version of it as well. We played the Next Generation base set, no expansions. And I don't remember who won. That's probably not important.
Oh, I think it was me. Oh, hang on. It definitely was me. I'll never, ever forget it.
Oh, that's I don't recall that.
Well, sorry. That's fine. You don't have to remember because I will remind you as often as I can. I mean, you know.
Whenever it comes up.
I've just got to be magnanimous. You know, it was just, it was a victory. You know, what can I say? Everyone played a good game. You just got unlucky. To be fair, I'll admit it. It was luck. It was luck. I got that amazing card that came out. And
because you were losing.
I was losing.
A lot.
Right. I was losing a lot. I was about to make a comeback anyway without that card. I mean, I was just ready with my deck. But, you know, it was great. Yeah. It saved my ass. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and this one was cool because we brought Gloria over. Normally not a board gamer, but a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
So I'm like, all right.
Very much so.
Yeah. What games can I get her to play being a Star Trek fan? And we'll make this work.
Right.
And she took her a few rounds to get into it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pressure on me after just doing learning and teaching games, talking about Gloria specifically.
Yes.
Can I do this? But yes, it was.
You did all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she got into it. And after the first few turns, you know, everyone was playing to win, and she was actually ahead for most of the time.
Yeah. Well, this,
until
I mean, we should probably
took her out, Josh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I don't want to be, you know, favoritism. That's like why, or, you know, I know it was her first time, but, you know,
you
can't go
down.
Easy on someone just because it's their first time. But, I, you know, she's a pretty casual gamer, and it was great to see her really get into it. And she loves the Star Trek theme, so that helped engage her into this game and really invest in it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, I don't want to say the reason you won, but probably the reason you won is because of the catch-up mechanics built into the game.
Yeah, no, totally.
So there's a few cards in the game where it specifically says the person with the least number of points gets this boon.
Yeah.
And if there is nobody with the least number of points, so if you're tied or something, the card just gets shuffled back into the deck.
Mm. Yeah.
So you were dead last.
Oh, yeah.
And your boon was go to the person with the most points, take their best card out of their points value and make it your own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But not only just the points, turn that into you had a zero ship.
Yes.
Useless, you know.
Terrible ship.
Terrible ship. To suddenly you have
starter ship.
Yeah, a Klingon battle cruiser.
It was like one of the best ships in the game.
So then you just started destroying everything.
It's a card you're using every turn because that ship is just there for every turn. So,
it
changed things.
You went from 000 to, I think, you know, 679 in your stats.
Yeah.
You know, which is huge because
in this game, it was huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think I really enjoyed it. I was pretty, I think I was last the entire time.
Right.
Yep. I tried to do something a little aggressive on the first turn and ended up getting destroyed right away. So it's like, all right, that didn't have that turn. But it wasn't just that. It was, I just wasn't getting that engine going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
which is, you know, surprising for you. I was like, surely Chris is throwing the game. Normally Chris is all over this and destroying everyone who's playing, but
I honestly was not trying to lose.
All right.
Plus the game
was not trying to lose, but maybe give yourself a handicap.
No, not even that.
No, okay.
I wanted to win. Just wasn't drawing cards that allowed that to happen.
Right.
So
you had some unlucky turns there.
Yeah. And then this is a game that can suffer from luck pretty easily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, it was fun. It was enjoyable.
It was really good fun. Yeah. I'd play again.
The game's interesting because we played it 1v1v1v1. But you can also play it co-op versus the Borg.
Yeah.
And you can also play it with teams. So it's like you're playing in a Klingon Civil War. So the game itself plays the same. It's just that you're working with different victory goals in mind. So
it's versatile.
Yeah.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that is all we have for off topic.
I believe so.
So all right, let's get on topic and
in this episode, we're talking about game classification. What's a Eurogame? What's with Ameritrash? Are mass market games just designer games that have gone viral? Today, we're going to try and sort all of this out. So, Chris, why are we talking about this today?
Well, I figure we're talking about a lot of different game concepts. And you guys are, like many of our listeners, hopefully as well, are new to certain topics. And I'll throw out words like Euro game or American game. Mm-hmm. And it's not always clear what I'm talking about. So I want to do an episode on just kind of when I use these words, what do I mean by them? What does the general gaming community think of them? How this all fits together. So I can use these words and just assume that you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's like an index for the rest of the show.
Exactly.
And if you're confused, go to this episode.
Nice. And in future episodes, we can say, go back to episode 6. We talk all about why we're calling this an abstract game or whatever the case is. So what do you guys think? Like when I say mass market game, what comes to mind as a mass market game?
Monopoly.
Yeah, I was just on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, that's the mass market game.
Everyone's played it. We're at Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever it is with your family.
Everyone's got a copy in their house somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. What's another one?
Scattergrees. I don't know if this is UK centric, but it's like a word list game. You roll a dice for a letter, do a list of things with that letter. I don't know if you guys played that, have you?
Yep. Scattergrees. We've played it.
Okay.
Risk.
Yes.
Is a mass market. Yahtzee.
Lots of word games. Boggle, yep. Scrabble.
Boggle,
Snakes
Scrabble.
And ladders.
It's shoots in America.
There we go. And like probably Ludo is something else here as well. There's like four color tracks that all lead to the middle when you jump around and go into.
Parcheesi?
Maybe.
Sorry.
I don't know.
Trouble?
Lost in Translation, apparently.
But they're all the same game.
But so actually, and what you're describing is, I'm fairly certain, well, I'm not sure about your weird UK games, but I'm fairly certain that all of the games we've just mentioned are made by three companies. Hasbro, Milton Bradley, and Parker Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They are sort of the kings of mass market games. And the reason for that, in my opinion, and I don't know for sure, but they're toy manufacturers. They make toys. Yeah. And so they treat games like toys. And if they're going to do a push of a toy, they're going to do a push of a game in the same way, which is flood their distribution lines. Mm-hmm. So when I refer to a mass market game, I'm usually talking about those kinds of companies and those kinds of games.
Mm-hmm. And probably what you're not talking about are the very strongly themed games that also get a mass market audience just because they are Harry Potter, the deck building game.
Right. Well, Harry Potter, the deck building game is probably a mass market game.
Okay.
Probably.
Okay.
But it's
in this day and age.
Yeah. But it's a gray area. So deck building has not been a mass market mechanic.
Right.
Like, I don't think you can think of any Milton Bradley game that had that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and Harry Potter was made by USAopoly, which is not necessarily a mass market company, but they do kind of cater more for those casual games. And it's Harry Potter's, and it's going into all of the stores. Like, they're pushing it in a mass market way. So we'll see. It's why it's such a gray area, but it is kind of mass markety.
Yeah, because that game is going to be in like sort of Barnes and Nobles and Targets, I assume.
Yeah,
those kind of stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the weird thing is all like many of the games that we think of as populist designer games are also in Target. They're in Barnes and Nobles. They have game sections. When you start going to these places and you look, there's a lot more designer games in these stores.
And how recent a trend is that?
I think that the designer games that have been around for a long time that have built up a following are the ones that you're starting to see, like Catan.
Ticket the Ride.
Yeah. The ones that everyone's heard of, everyone's played. They've been around for a while. You can get them everywhere now.
Yep.
But you're not going to find like games Chris is kickstarting at Target anytime soon.
Yeah. Right. Except for like Exploding Kittens.
Yeah.
Which was a kickstarted game.
Oh.
Yeah. It's actually
really took off.
Yeah. I think it's still the most backed game at like over $8 million.
Whoa. Have you guys played this game?
I have.
Any good?
I liked it. Yeah? It's, it doesn't take a lot to get into. I didn't feel like there was very much strategy to it, but it is fun.
Yeah,
the
pictures so that
are fun.
That sounds totally mass market, right? Because that's another.
It has a lot of appeal to a wide audience.
And, And that is key. And you're right, Joshua. That is really what makes mass market. Simple to get into.
Right.
Easy rules, straightforward. You know, Monopoly is the first mass market. Anyone's going to name that as the board game.
Of course.
It is probably the most complex rule set for a mass market game. And even then, I think the rule book's only like 4 to 8 pages.
Right.
But there's a rule book there that you need to kind of read. Yeah. That's not like 1 page long. A lot of mass market games are very, very simple.
It's not just printed on the top of the box.
Right. Like, it, you know, they're like Loop and Louie, just press this button. Hungry, Hungry Hippo, just press this button. Yeah. Like, you don't have to read the rules. It's like, oh, I have more marbles than you. I probably won. You know, so
how
those.
How about Pie Face?
Don't know Pie Face.
You don't know Pie Face? Oh, my goodness.
I don't think I know Pie Face either.
This is a game where you have a little, there's a little face cut out and you put your face in there.
Right.
And there's a hand in front of you that you put whipped cream on.
Ooh.
And you spin the spinner and you twist the handle.
You actually put whipped cream, real whipped cream.
Real whipped cream. And you twist, and between 1 and 5 times, I think, and it goes off at a random time.
Oh, wow. It's like Russian roulette with whipped cream.
With whipped cream in your face. It's like a, and you get a pie in the face.
That sounds great.
Yeah. We played it with my day camp and they really liked it.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a big.
That's so, and your day camp is young kids, right?
6 to 12.
All right. So, I mean, that's another classification is kids games.
Yeah.
Kids games, especially for younger kids games, when you look at those games, I would not refer to them as games because there's rarely a decision that you ever would have to make. It's usually do something, roll something, spin something, twist something, and eventually something will happen. Maybe follow the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine sent me pictures of her daughter playing Hi-Ho Cheerio.
Yep.
Hi-Ho Cheerio, Cheerio, right?
Yeah.
Spin a thing, and there's 3 different colors cherries, and you're pulling them out of a basket.
You're trying to clear your tree.
Yeah, you have a tree. So there's a green tree, red tree, and blue tree, or something like that.
And yellow.
And yellow. Mm-hmm. And you just... If you spin it,
I'm very familiar with children's games. I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the podcast that I work at a park and I do day camp with 6 to 12 year olds. I mostly do preschool programs, though, so I am all about kids' games.
Nice.
But they teach kids, you know, the mechanics of games without having to bog them. There's no strategy to shoots and ladders.
But they're learning turn taking and following
numbers,
directions. Yeah.
Counting.
Yep. Learning how to win and lose, too.
Yes.
You know, like how to be a good winner and a good loser. And right. You know,
something
it's
that
just
some adults could still work on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't flip the table.
Don't flip the table. And, yeah.
I know you were tempted earlier when you lost so terribly, Chris, but.
That was a rough one. I immediately just started packing up the game in silence.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Like, no, I don't care about winning. Whatever.
Make sure you sort out the starter cards.
I hate you people. Yeah. Get those cards in the right stacks. No, it's fine. Congratulations, Josh. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, what came to mind about, you know, we started with Monopoly. Monopoly is an interesting one because why is it so large in everyone's imagination? Okay, we've all played it around those holiday things, but what elements have gone into that game to make that mass market one so seemingly popular? I mean, real, like, hardcore gamers hate it, but, you know, average person.
Well, for the most part, there's a couple things about Monopoly, and lots of people done, you know, kind of more analysis in this. Like, just try to be brief of what I've learned. But Monopoly is not a good game.
No.
There's a lot of mechanics to Monopoly that are just bad.
Right.
It's very random. Right. When you roll the dice, that tells you where you're moving to. So when you move, you have a couple choices. If the property's not bought already, then you can buy it. And if it you don't buy it, most people play incorrectly where the property just stays in the bank. And so that makes the game run on forever.
Yeah.
The proper rule is the property immediately goes up for auction.
Right.
And everybody can bid on it. And so you don't have to land on a property more than once to buy it. So you... Right. That's one thing. People play that wrong. Once you have a monopoly, like, you have to negotiate. So the negotiation part is the biggest part of Monopoly in my mind.
Right.
I really want Boardwalk, and I'll give you these 3 properties for that
and
one.
And some money
Boardwalk.
As well.
Yeah, and
I'll
add your money, yeah. So it is, and we're going to get to this in a second, it's the quintessential American-style game.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of randomness.
Okay.
And it's elimination as well. So the game can play for, with most American house rules, plays for hours. Yes. But then you can get eliminated really early on.
Yep.
Right.
You land on that wrong square. Just done.
Yep. So,
but see, you're telling me all the reasons it's terrible, and I know you're a hardcore gamer. Yeah, and I agree with you, but yet it's popular and everyone plays it, and it seems to be more popular than the random other random mass market games than, say, Chutes and Ladders or whatever other games that are out there.
Yeah, so Hasbro has done, I think it's Hasbro.
I thought it was Milton Bradley.
Milton Bradley has done a great job with Monopoly. So Monopoly was patented. And you couldn't do a Monopoly-style game.
Right.
The patent ran out a couple decades ago now.
Right.
And other people were able to make Monopoly-style games. I actually have one called Techopoly or something like that. Some friends got it for me. Thought that'd be funny. It's, I've never played it.
Practical joke on Chris. Yeah,
so I've never played it. But what they have done with Monopoly is theme it to death.
Right.
Every version of Monopoly that you can possibly think of. Chicago Monopoly, Harry Potter Monopoly, Star Wars Monopoly, Star Trek Monopoly. So people will just collect these things because the pieces are kind of cool.
They've been opened once.
They've been opened once.
But rarely played.
Yep. And it's a great gift. Like, oh, yeah. I'm going to give it to you as a gift because everybody likes Monopoly, right? And if you've played other games, like, no, everybody doesn't like Monopoly. But the masses aren't ready yet to shift over to designer games. So it's always going to be out
there. Here's my kind of working theory is basically what you hinted at when you said the key mechanic of the game is trading. As opposed to most mass market game, which is like roll and move, seems to be a lot of mass market games. You roll a dice, you move. In this one, you've got this interaction element of, oh, I've got these things that I own and you can land on it and I can take your money and then we can trade. And it's that, I feel like it's that interactive element that really
I will
sucks
give you that.
More people in.
And if it, so at its heart, Monopoly is still a roll and move game.
Yeah.
And if you took that element out of it, I think the game would actually improve quite a bit. Because then it, you don't have such randomness in there. Because you just have bad rolls. Oh, I landed on taxes again. Oh, I'm going to jail.
Right.
Oh, I've landed on your property again and I owe you money.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do to control that.
Yeah.
You roll those dice and that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, so if you added some kind of element where it's like, oh, I now have a card that can change the die result by one. Even that would be something you could control and decide when you wanted to play that. Otherwise, it's just, well, I got lucky or I got unlucky. But that's sort of the good thing about it, too.
The other thing about Monopoly is that it was originally made by... it wasn't called Monopoly. It was called The Landlord's Game.
Yep.
And it had two sets of rules. And there was one that is the mean set of rules. That's the one we all play with still. And there was a nice set of rules that was supposed to be so much better game. And it was supposed to teach you an economic lesson. But there was so much fun involved in messing around with other people that that's the one that stuck around. And if you are interested in the history of Monopoly and The Landlord's Game, I would direct you to 99% Invisible. And their episode on
podcast,
it,
right?
Podcast, it is a podcast.
Right.
Yeah. It is really interesting because it was designed to say, hey, look, capitalism's bad.
How terrible is this rule set that stuck around forever?
It accidentally became popular is what happened. So, yeah. So, let's – Monopoly, mass market. But it is kind of a good segue into the term Ameritrash. I don't actually like this term.
I'll tell you what, every British person will probably love this term.
Yeah. So you have Euro-style games and you have Ameritrash games. Ameritrash games, Monopoly is a pretty good example of what they're talking about. With them, and I'm just going to say American-style games.
Right.
American-style games tend to be more random in resolution. So you're taking an action, the resolution's a random thing. So in Monopoly, your action is essentially just take your turn. And then what happens is a random roll and something goes on. It's elimination. American-style games oftentimes have elimination. It is not as much you don't have all the information on the board usually. It's just a lot of random is an American-style game.
Right.
Where on the Euro side, the randomness is out of the resolution part, and it's in the what decisions you have available for you to make part. Also, Euro-style games tend to not be elimination games. What I've heard of Euro-style games and where they came from is after World War II, Europe was essentially tired of, and specifically Germany, mm-hmm. was tired of conflict. And that whole idea of elimination was something that was not politically correct. So a new type of game started being created where everybody played until the end, and then you could decide what happened, you know, how, what the resolution mm-hmm. was at the end. You see a lot of point tracks in Euro-style games.
Yeah.
So, and you see a lot of, like, the point salad games we play today is a lot of that kind of Euro-style games.
Yeah.
So, do you guys, have you heard the term before? I mean, how do you think of that?
I'd never heard of Ameritrash. And the reason I said I think British people would like it was because a lot of British people seem to have a kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a weird chip on their shoulder about Americans. And they're like, oh, those brash Americans. And they're so arrogant and, you know, over the top and loud and obnoxious. I don't have that. I actually really like Americans.
We like you too.
Thanks.
Just you, though. Not
yes, no. I know. There's a sort of love-hate relationship.
You and Colin Firth.
I know. We're good. Maybe Hugh Grant. It seems this love-hate thing and sort of the Ameritrash moniker, I think, would amuse a lot of British people. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'd never heard of it. So I thought it was funny. And then I looked it up and it seemed to, I thought it had something to do with being heavily themed as well when I read some definition of it.
Yes. So American games versus European games. And I don't think this applies as much today, but European games tend to be less thematic than American style games.
Right.
American style games is all about the glitz and the glamour and, you know, lots of plastic in the box and all that kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where Euro style games is like, no. Cardboard chits work just fine. You know,
you'll notice a lot of them have the same pieces, the same wooden shapes used in different ways.
Yeah.
The
generic meeple.
Yeah.
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that too, and I'm just like, I don't think that's actually true anymore.
Okay.
But that kind of gets us into where modern gaming is. I don't know that there are many games that are pure American style or pure Euro style anymore.
Right.
I think that they're starting to see games that are coming more of a hybrid.
Yeah.
And it's an
interesting... Because most of the Euro games I've played seem to have a fairly strong theme. Mm-hmm. That's different to the earlier ones. Like, you know, Catan, you know, does seem pretty generic, you know, these little meeples and wood and sheep, and
mm-hmm.
but it's not like a theme, you know.
There's a lot of farming games in Europe.
Yes.
Right. We love to farm.
Yeah.
A lot of building towns too.
Yes.
Settling.
Right.
Farming, road building, all seem to be big themes.
But am I right in saying that the newer ones tend to have a stronger theme as we know it, like, I don't know, your Vikings or whatever?
Well, a lot of those are still American style games.
Right.
Like, we play a lot of American games
because I see the point track around the outside and I just think Euro instantly.
Yep. And and I think what's happening is a lot of American game designers are pulling the elements from Euro games into the American games.
Right.
So what we're seeing today, especially for American designers, is this theme is there with European elements in it, so you get this hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the European side, there are some games that are just always, they stay in Europe, and they are a bit more abstract, and we'll get to abstract versus, actually, I guess we're talking abstract versus theme.
Yeah.
But they, even on the European side, they still want to sell in the US market.
Right.
That's where games are being sold.
Yeah.
So they're pulling the American elements into their games, which is that heavy theming, lots of plastics, those kind of things. And so we're seeing these games kind of crossing and becoming
merging in the middle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of the definitions I like is, and I think it's kind of a good way of thinking about games in general, is both games have random elements in it. American games usually have the same choices that you can make, and the resolution is random. I choose to move to this territory in Risk, for example. I'm going to choose to move to this territory. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to roll dice and see what happens.
Right.
Yep.
So that's an American style game. European style games have randomness in what you can do.
Right.
But the resolution is not random. So worker placement, for example, is a very good way of representing a European game. Right. Mm-hmm. I can't place a worker where Kitty placed a worker.
Right.
So when she places that worker there, my turn has suddenly changed in what I can do.
Right.
So I need to pick the right thing to do. But once I place my worker wherever it happens to be, I get exactly what that worker gets.
Right. Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah. Because that then is the randomness, like you're saying. What other people have done beforehand is that random element.
And it doesn't have to necessarily be what other people have done. It can be in cards too. So maybe I draw five cards and now I have to choose one of those cards.
Right.
But the randomness part is done.
Yes.
Now here are your options. This is what you can do. When you do it, that's a set thing that's happening. We just got done playing the Star Trek deck building game. And I think a lot of deck building games, you draw your cards. So that's your choices are in your hand, and then how you play it is deterministic.
Right.
So by that definition, most deck building games would be European style.
Sure. Although, actually, in this game, there was, you know, random elements. You'd go and explore, and there's a whole deck of explore cards. Flip it over. Is it going to be something bad? Is it going to be something good?
You're absolutely right.
Right.
Definitely, this game was an Ameritrash game.
Right.
And
heavily themed.
Heavily themed. Yeah. But also a little bit of a hybrid, but you're right. The randomness of the encounter deck was immense.
Yes.
I choose to explore, some random thing comes out and either loses me the game or wins me the wins you the game.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it seems like recently to me, there's been a big uptick in how many games come out every year. And that really started with the European style games, as it comes from Europe. A lot of them are released in Europe, and that really opened up a lot of room for more people to do the same thing. They really saw that there's a market here, and Kickstarter has been huge in funding these games that never would have been made before.
Right.
Well, Kickstarter, finding markets for the games that they're making.
Yep. Kickstarter is a big one because now anybody can self-publish a game. There are a ton, well, not a ton, but at least two big websites you can go to actually just create a game and have them printed on demand. So I can create an entire game and print one of them, which is something we couldn't do 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I heard that Monopoly, if you were to print a single copy of Monopoly, it'd cost you like $50 just to make the manufacture the game at wholesale. They're sold for $12 in Target. They do that on volume. Like that's how they can make that happen. But indie developers can now make a game and sell it. You're talking about so many games being released. We were just talking before we started recording about Essen, which is Essen Germany, huge board game trade show. It's not like a Gen Con or something. You don't go there to play games. You go there to see all the games that are being released. And this year there's over 700 games that are going to be released.
Would you say it's the biggest one in the world then?
It is the biggest new game show.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not the biggest show as far as, you know, attendees and things like that.
But the trade
show. But the trade show aspect of it. The number of games that are released and trying to get distribution and stuff, it goes there. But Kitty's right. I mean, you tend to, you know, good artists steal, great artists steal more or something like that.
Something along those lines.
Something like that.
Da Vinci said it. I'm sure. My client said someone like that.
But you have to. You're going to be stealing these elements. You're going to see a lot of things. In, and to innovation is really, oh, I'll take a little of this and a little of this and a little of this and mix it together and see what happens. And suddenly all our games are shades of gray.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard writers say that too, where if they stop reading, they stop having things to write because they stop thinking of what they would write about that story, what they would change. That's where you get your ideas, is like playing a game. Oh, this rule doesn't make sense to me. I would do it this way. And then maybe I'd change this. And then all of a sudden you've made up your own game.
Yep.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like I've heard it said that actually there's no true original thought, and that it's that every piece of art is some sort of influence from all these different things and experiences you've had in your life. So I can totally see where you're getting there.
Yeah. And it is really, really rare to find a game that develops a new mechanic. And when that happens, it's really rare for that mechanic to be very polished.
Right.
We've been playing a lot of deck building games, and we'll probably do a podcast just on deck building games, but Dominion was the first one. Until then, you didn't see deck building games. Dominion's maybe a decade at this point.
Wow. 10 years.
So it was created and tons and tons of expansions came out. But the game itself is, I don't dislike Dominion,
right,
but it's unrefined as far as what you can do with deck building games.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time the mechanic was created, it's like, I just want to, you know, he just wanted to see, does the mechanic work? And it did, and it worked really, really well and created a new type of game. Magic the Gathering. This is, you know, 1992, I believe.
Wow.
Before then, there were no collectibles.
I was a child.
I remember because I'm dating myself now, but I was a senior in high school when I first saw my first Magic the Gathering booster pack.
Yeah.
And I bought that one pack because I'm like, this is weird. What is this? And I opened it up and there were cards in there. I'm like, it looks like some kind of game, but I don't know what this is. Then I went off to, I guess it was college. And then I came back and it had become this huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that summer, my friends and I just played it all like nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
But before then, there were no trading card games. After that, hundreds of trading card games showed up.
All of a sudden you have Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh. Yeah.
Well, those were the ones that lasted. The number of knockoffs at the next convention after Magic.
Oh, I bet.
Almost half of Gen Con was trading card games.
Wow.
And they all failed, besides a few. Like, Pokemon's made by Wizards of the Coast as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that momentum. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is very popular, you know, title, so it got momentum.
Yeah,
on
Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Also have the shows that really drive the collectability of the characters, because it's not just the card, what it does, it's... There's a sentimental, like, oh, everyone loves Pikachu.
Yep. Well, and you'd see a lot of, like, Warcraft tried to do a trading card game. And you would think they have lots of people, you know, there's a lot, but it still failed because it's just not going to work. So then we moved over to living card games, LCGs, instead of CCGs, where it's just collectible card games. Still,
isn't this the distinction is you don't have to spend so much damn money on the
thing? That is basically what the distinction is. So an LCG, and this all goes in classification of games that we can talk about, but an LCG, you get a box of cards, and usually the box is way bigger than necessary for the number of cards in it.
Right.
And they're going to release expansions, usually on a steady stream, but once you buy that expansion set of cards, you don't have to buy anything else. There's no rarities in the cards. They certainly don't make as much money for the publishers, but for the consumers, you can still get your depth of deck creation and things like that, but you're not having to worry about spending thousands of dollars every 4 months when a new set's sent out.
Right.
So, mechanics are fun. And I'm still waiting. I think everybody in the gaming industry waits for the next new mechanic.
Right.
Then there's a bunch of mechanics that are cool, but we don't use that often. Drafting is used fairly often. Most people will understand what a drafting game is. And for those who don't, you draw maybe six cards and you're going to pick one and then you're going to pass the rest to your left and you're going to get five cards from the person to your right. And then you pick one and pass. And you know, so basically from what you have, you're going to pick a card from. It's an interesting mechanic. It's in Blood Rage that has a drafting mechanic. Seven Wonders has a drafting mechanic in it. So those are interesting mechanics and kind of gives you some control over what you're getting, gives you some choices to set up your game. You have you split, I pick mechanic. And we've all done this, right? When you're cutting the last piece of pie, I'll cut it in half and you choose the piece you want.
Yeah.
In a game, it's kind of the same way. It's like, okay, here's six cards. Right. I'm going to put them into two different piles, and you're going to pick the pile you want, and I get the other pile.
Right.
Now, that makes for fun strategic. Like, well, do I put the really good card just in its own pile?
I don't know that I've ever
itself?
Played one with that mechanic.
I don't think I've ever played that.
That's an interesting one.
It is a fun mechanic. There's not a lot of games that use it. There should be more, though.
Right. Can you think kind of any off the top of your head? It's going to be tough, isn't it?
Not off the top of my head, although I'm looking over at my games right now and I know.
Scanning quickly his collection.
Do we have a picture of your game collection up on our website? Because
we really
should.
You know something? I will make that picture the theme, the
picture
for this particular episode. Although maybe not in its current state. It's a little bit of a
mess. You might want to clean up a little bit.
Mess. Yeah. So we'll but that mechanic, you split, I pick,
right.
is a fun mechanic. I think it should be used more often in games.
So just to be sure, you don't see the actual cards. You're just seeing two piles of face down.
No, you see the cards.
Oh, you get to look.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's even cooler.
So imagine that you're playing a game that has an attack mechanic.
Okay.
And you have cards that are attack cards.
Yeah.
And they have different special functions on them when you use them. So think Blood Rage. Yeah. But whatever the case, that's abstract.
Sure.
You have one card that has a really high attack value and a really cool special effect when you use it. But it's only one. And then I have six cards to distribute, and I put in the other pile. They're all medium size, but they have good, decent effects, not great.
Right.
I could put those five cards in one pile. So now you have to choose. Do I want the super awesome card?
Yeah.
Or do I want the five cards because that's going to let me do more things?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get the five cards because I have plans to do more things, but I'm trying to tempt you with this super awesome card.
Right.
You know, or maybe I want the super awesome card and that's why I'm giving you so much other stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that thought process is the type of thing where it's like you can do with that mechanic.
Nice. How do I bait them into picking the one I want them to pick?
Exactly.
I feel like older siblings would have an advantage in that situation because I cannot tell you how many times I have talked my siblings into taking the smaller half of the cookie because it had more chocolate chips in it.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, that's a great example. Like you're cutting a cookie and like, oh, look, there's five chocolate chips on that side. So I'm just going to cut those five off, but I'm going to get this big part over here. I have two-thirds of the cookie.
Yeah.
That is smart. Oh, my goodness. That's devious. I've got to be careful around you.
Yeah. She's a tricky one.
That's good, though.
That's why my siblings won't play with me anymore.
Another classification I want to throw out there is indie games.
Okay.
This, again, everything's a gray area when it comes to games, but indie games are those games that are developed by a developer. Maybe they're doing the whole thing on their own, or maybe they're doing it with a friend. And a lot of times you'll see these games are the ones that are being put on Kickstarter.
The garage band.
The garage band.
Of games.
Yes. Yep. I made this game in my garage. Now, fortunately, Kickstarter allows us to get much better quality in our indie games these days, and the support for game developers in general increase the quality. But a lot of these games, they don't have the same level of playtesting and refinement of non-independent games, of actually big publisher games, which is another classification. You have indie games versus publisher games. But when you find that indie game that really is nice and refined, that's like a cool find. You know, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing.
A diamond in the rough.
Yeah, exactly. The Resistance is actually a pretty good example of it.
Okay.
They were just this little independent game company and like, okay, we have this game. And I remember playing it at Gen Con for the first time. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. It's kind of like Werewolf, but nobody gets eliminated. You get to play the entire game.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big social deduction game player, but that's the one that I will play.
Yep. And that one
I don't have to be tricked into.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Basically put them on the map as a company now. And then they have like the one night resistant or one night games are part of that same company. So you have to, when I mention indie games, normally I'm going to mention it in a way that, well, it's an indie game, but it's still pretty good.
Because I remember seeing some Reddit post that was like, every year there are like 5,000 and something games, board games that are brought out, and like the majority of them are bad because they are someone doing it as a hobby. And like you say, haven't been as play tested, haven't been as refined. So it does seem to be a bit more of a roulette in terms of the quality of that game.
Yeah. Well, especially when you do the print and play. Well, print and play is a different thing, and I'll define that in a second, but the print on demand games where anybody can put a game on this site and that you can go to it and you can buy their games, they're not good.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Parks and Rec, the Cones of Dunshires, what it is.
Yeah.
Where it's just, he was unemployed for a few weeks and came up with this ridiculously complicated game. And he's an accountant. So the big joke is that everyone fights over who gets to be the scorekeeper. Their own role.
Yep. That's, yes. I don't want to play that game either. Although maybe I do want to play it a little bit.
They did it at was it at Gen Con or a different convention where they had a charity buy-in one-time event?
Wow. See, that you can make any game fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pick a terrible game.
Just make it really scarce.
Yes. And you'll make it scarce and everyone wants to play it.
Yeah.
And that works too. But print and play is a different thing. I want to just cover that real quick.
Right.
A lot of games now, especially on Kickstarter, are releasing print and play versions where they send you a PDF, you print it out, you cut out all the different pieces, you have the rules, and you can play the game. It's not actual, you know, real components, paper components, but you can play through the entire game and decide if you like it enough to back them and you know, get the real game.
Yes.
So that's an interesting marketing mechanic. Honestly, it's one of those things where there's really no downside to it.
Yeah.
Now that the courts have ruled that anyone can steal a game and republish it, retheme it, the artwork and the names can be copyrighted, but a game cannot be copyrighted. The rules can't be.
Oh.
The mechanics can't be.
Wow. I didn't know this. How was this recent?
Yeah, actually just within the last year.
Wow.
There was a game.
This is big news.
Yeah, there was a game and I don't remember the name of it, but there was a company in China that just took it and copied it wholesale. Right. They changed the art, changed the names, but the mechanics, I mean, even down to the rule book and the presentation of the rules were in the same order and everything. And the company sued them.
Yeah.
And the court said, no, you can't copyright rules.
Right.
And this is just a rule set. They can do that. Right. In one way, people are like, oh, well, that's terrible. Anybody can steal my game. Yes. But if you don't do that, you have the situation that you have in the software industry right now,
right,
where everybody is suing everyone over software patents.
Right.
It's an idea, but you can patent it.
Pinch and zoom. That was my idea. So no one else can pinch and zoom. Well, then how else are you going to make a really good touchscreen thing?
Yeah. Had the ruling gone in the other way, game progress would essentially stop.
Wow.
Because there's, like we were talking earlier,
you
can't make a game with a completely original idea. You're always going to be pulling in from something.
So
that way, now fine, I'll do print and play. And if you like it, then hopefully you'll feel like you can back my game.
Wasn't there some really expensive game that you were like, I'm going to have to print and play this first?
Yes. On Kickstarter, I ended up not backing it.
Right.
Because it's God Wars.
Okay.
I ended up not backing it simply because it was so expensive. And if I wanted to get everything, I was going to drop like $600-$700.
And you can't not get everything.
I can't not get everything.
So now you're probably not going to print and play it because you're so worried that you're going to like it enough that you're going to drop that money on it.
Also, the print and play requires X-Acto knives and gluing things to quarters and doing a lot more than...
That sounds like my kind of work.
Print it out, give it to Kitty.
Can't tell you how many construction paper projects I cut out on a weekly basis.
You should just bring it and have the kids do it, make them think they're doing...
like you don't, a fun project? You don't want my preschool class to get your project.
No, I probably don't want that. That's true.
At least not until the end of the year. We just started Scissor Skills.
All right. Well, when they get good, let me know. We'll make them like our own little, you know, workforce for
Starting a sweatshop here in America.
A child game making sweatshop.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there are laws against much better. That.
Well, no, it's teaching. And utilizing the results.
Yeah, we'll see what the courts say about that.
I think I'll win.
Okay.
Probably not. I've been on a losing streak. Yeah, after our last podcast, we were talking about me winning all the time. Kitty won the next game. Josh won the last game.
Yep.
I don't think I've won since we've recorded that.
Yeah.
I'm going to... Yeah.
We're pretty happy about it.
I know. I'm loving life.
Yeah.
Hopefully you lose your mojo for a bit longer.
No.
We played last week?
You did not play Tyrants of the Underdark. No, you played Tyrants of the Underdark, right?
No. Above and Below.
Above and Below.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Yep. Which is another, it was a fun kind of Euro style point gathering storytelling game.
It's really fun.
Yes.
I do feel though sometimes with the point gathering games that it feels like it ends very abruptly.
I agree.
Like, I just get my thing going, and then it's over.
Yep. There's
definitely with that one as well.
Yeah.
Well, particularly.
Again, another classification, turn-limited games.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So Above and Below is a turn-limited game. You play seven turns, and then the game is over. So what we felt like, this game's really fun. Oh, look at all the cool things I can do. And it's the last turn.
And I did two of them.
Yep. Terra Mystica is another one, turn-limiting game. We have, there's a number of turn-limiting, lots of turn-limiting games, really. And I kind of agree. It's like that whole, and then stop.
Well, yeah. Maybe it would work if it stopped at the right time. I mean, I don't know if you have any examples of one where I was like, well, that was turn limited, but it ended just when it needed to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't think.
But probably hard to make get it yeah. right and really hit it on the
nail. I grew up playing elimination games all the time.
Ameritrash.
And
I was not always the oldest. I am the second of four kids. So when I was playing with my older sister and my cousin, I was almost always the first to get eliminated because I was the youngest one playing and they right. could just beat me up. But there was still fun to watching mm-hmm. them, and I would watch them play the rest of the game and learn from it for the next time.
This segues quite nicely into what I was thinking about, which is we were talking about Euro games, talking about American games. Do you think there's an element here of like the culture coming through in those kind of rules and that maybe the more aggressive, the more eliminative style and the more competitive style is an American thing and the Euro ones being a bit, I don't know, kinder, inclusive? Discuss.
Yeah. We're aggressive and you must be eliminated.
Right.
Yeah. That's basically how that goes.
So hardcore here. It's, huh? You know, dog eat dog.
It's just the way it is.
Every man for himself.
No, I think you're right, though, and that's where American-style games, I think where the America trash concept comes from, where you're just always beating down people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it does feel, at least as far as the rest of the world sees America, is like that's the kind of personalities Americans yeah. have.
Right. Individualistic.
And, yes.
Competitive.
I'm going to win.
Didn't a lot of the co-op one. Games come out of America?
So, actually, that's a great so many classifications. We're going to run a little long. So co-op games. Co-op games, honestly, I don't know the origins of them, but a lot, like Pandemic was one of the first co-op games that I know became mm-hmm. very popular.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Yeah. So we went from a game systems where the one person survives, everyone else is eliminated, to nobody gets eliminated unless all of us get eliminated. It's all or nothing against the board. So it, in my mind, it's like a team solitaire. You know, you're mm-hmm. playing against the deck. You're playing against the board. It's going to be hard, and you're going to feel good when you win. Mm-hmm. So that is a really good point where those co-op games, I believe they were essentially out of U.S. designers. And possibly in reaction to, okay, how do we get people into this gaming community without all this hyper-competitivism?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hyper-competitiveness.
Sure.
Hyper-competitiveness. So, yeah, and a few other classifications I want to mention. Social deduction.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game, we've mentioned Werewolf a lot. Yeah. I think we've described it. But social deduction games are essentially where you are trying to play against other people head-to-head, mind-to-mind. Mm-hmm.
There are secret roles that yes. you are trying to decide who is the bad guy as a yeah. group.
Yep.
There's 10 of you around the table. Some of them are bad. Some of them are good. Yeah.
And you can look someone in the eyes and be like, are you bad or good? And try to make that judgment call.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and some games like Resistance have mechanics in the game that help you do that. Mm-hmm. Some things like Werewolf, there is no game mechanic sort of. Yeah. You're just asking each other questions to see if you mm-hmm. can figure out who the liar is.
Psych them out into yep. giving Mafia away the truth.
Is the... Yep. Homemade version of
yeah.
these.
Yeah, so you have Mafia, which is just like Werewolf, just different names for things.
Is this the sort of grandfather game, the first one that spawned all the others?
Mafia, you have what? You have a detective, which is the werewolf, which is like the seer. Then you have the two mobsters, uh-huh. which are the werewolves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you have everyone else is like a citizen.
Right? Sometimes you can play with a doctor.
Yep. And Mafia has a lot of extra roles, just like Ultimate Werewolf has mm-hmm. a lot of extra roles.
Right.
So...
I mean, I enjoy that. Like, I enjoy the, you know, you're all sitting there trying to psych each other out, trying to mm-hmm. lie or deceive or tell the truth, or just, if you're the good person, figure out who the hell is the damn bad people. You just, it could be any of these people.
I don't like that.
I know.
Because everyone starts looking at me and I just turn bright red. I'm terrible right. at lying.
Right. I can see that.
It's always Katie. It's actually kind of funny because when you accuse someone of lying and they're not lying, they normally have a larger response
yes.
to mm-hmm. it. Like it's either they're getting very defensive or they're like can't stop laughing, or they're just like, oh my god, they're being accused, and I'm not lying, but they're going to think I'm lying. Right. And the actual liars tend to be a little bit more reserved. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm fine. I'm
I feel like werewolf. Spencer right. breaks those games though.
In what just way? Because he's too so straight faced.
Yeah, he. I don't know if what this says about my marriage that my husband is really good at lying. But yeah, he. It's very hard to tell with him, and he's almost always the bad guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I some of the best advice I ever got playing werewolf was play like you're the villager. Right. Just think you're a villager.
Right.
And don't worry about anything else. Just think you're a villager.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because the best way to lie, if you ever watch like Lie to Me or something like that, is really you can't lie about something you believe to be true.
Right.
So if you just convince yourself that something's true when it's not really, then you're not lying anymore.
You're a method actor playing the part of a good guy, despite the fact that you happen to be a bad guy.
Exactly.
Right.
Maybe it's because I play with you and Spencer that I don't enjoy these games very much.
They're so good.
Chris is method. Spencer's a great liar. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. I'm a terrible liar.
Wow. Let's see. A couple more game classifications. I classify games as activities versus games. An activity is like the roll and do, when there's no decisions in the game. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not really a game. It's just an activity. Huh. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It can still be fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, Left, Center, Right is one of those games I'm always giving a hard time to. But when you're playing it, you can have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an activity. It's not a game. There's no choices that the person's making.
Right.
And a lot of the kids' games we were talking about. Skill games, those are games that have very little, if any, randomness. Where it's just like I'll call it a pure skill game.
Yeah.
The more randomness in the game, the less skill is necessary to be good at it.
Yeah.
So those are another kind of classification.
And so hang on, an example would be like chess.
Chess is a pure skill game. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Checkers is a pure skill game.
Right.
Everything's on the table, literally. Yeah. And it's just you versus your opponent.
Right.
There's no dice involved.
Gotcha.
Where Yahtzee is a mostly luck game.
Yeah.
You know, roll five dice. You're trying to get straights and groups of the same number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get to choose in what dice you re-roll.
Sure.
That's your only choice there. Yeah. Yahtzee is almost completely luck.
Yeah.
But if you make bad choices every single time, it doesn't matter. You're going to lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's bad choices that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, the completely luck games, which I would also argue, the completely luck games are the ones that are
roll
more
and
activities.
Move as well.
Yeah. Well, roll and move. Yeah. Has if roll and move is the primary thing and you're making very little decisions based on what happens, then that luck factors in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think Board Game Geek should have a classification of luck versus skill.
Oh, okay.
Because I think it could be a sliding scale.
Oh, sure, yeah. You could have a 10-point system there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's a 1, all luck, or it's a 10, all skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can kind of like, maybe we'll do that for the games that we play.
Yeah, we should do that.
Because I think that almost everything can be classified as how much skill versus how much luck do we think this game
involves. That idea, yeah. Right. Do something for the community. Give back.
Yeah, we're going to start with our game of today.
Yes.
We will put that on the luck to skill scale. Luck to skill scale. I like it. Any other game, like general classifications you guys can think of?
I may touched a little bit on abstract, but I wasn't sure how much we really defined that.
Yeah, so abstract games are games that are essentially themeless, but still games.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at chess, it is a mostly abstract game, but there is a theme there.
Mm-hmm.
Kill the king, you have all the basically court things. If you look at checkers, that is a pure abstract game.
Mm-hmm.
There is no theme there whatsoever.
Yep.
Now, modern games, most of them are themed games. It can be a light theme, but most of them have something. There's artwork on there. There's something that gets you involved in the games. Although there are companies that specifically work with abstract games.
Mm-hmm.
When we talked about Homeworlds, Looney Labs Pyramids, those are all abstract games. Use the same pieces and they represent things.
Mm-hmm.
But by itself, it's just pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have really any kind of theme in the game pieces. I would say almost every card game, if not every card game, is probably could be considered an abstract game. You're using the same set of things and just putting a whole bunch of rules on it, different kinds of rule sets. Yeah. So it is abstract by nature, you know, unless you're using the Jack and the Queen and the King for actual purposes. And all right, so the Jack is going to do this to your Queen, or maybe you could put a theme on there. But
I'm wondering if the games like Jenga, for instance, are would you categorize that in the abstract games, or are these, you know, I'm thinking physical games like Kerplunk, is that how you call it?
Kerplunk,
pick up sticks. These are kind of almost physical games that require dexterity,
and they're like actually called dexterity games. So that is another classification. Flick 'em up,
really good one.
Oh, really?
I can't remember his name. Topple, maybe.
Well, how describe it?
You have three different sizes of bent metal sticks, and there's a tower with the hook at the top, and you dangle your metal things. You build the thing, and I think it's called Topple, whoever topples it over. But it was a fun one.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's an entire classification of games, dexterity games. And they are more skill in my mind than luck. Yeah. You have to be dexterously good. Now, luck involves a little bit. It's like, oh, crap, that was a lucky shot.
Yeah.
But you're attempting to be skillful. Flick 'em up is like this cowboy thing where you're like trying to shoot cowboys off horses and stuff like that. So that's a great classification
beer pong.
Game. Yep. Beer pong. Yes, that is a dexterity game at its finest.
Yep.
I think all dexterity games are very skillful games.
Yeah.
You know, because it is just what you can do and how good you are at it. And if you practice, you will get better.
Right.
That was a good one.
Topple is actually a different dexterity game than the game I was thinking of.
Okay.
But still,
I've
got to
figure
game.
It out. Yeah.
Let's see. I think that's kind of the broader things. And as we talk about other games, we may bring up more classifications and things like that. But I wanted to just give a general baseline for when we reference these games.
Yeah.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's see. I just want
to
make sure.
I can't wait to use Ameritrash more often.
Suspend.
That's the game. All right. We're going to have to try these. You can use Ameritrash as much as you want. I'm going to use Brexit.
You're going to make me cry.
I'm going to try. All right. So I think you're already running a little bit long, but unless you guys have anything else to add.
Kitty's showing us the game. That's why we went silent for a second there.
Sorry.
No, it was cool for us at least. Yeah.
We're going to get Kitty used to the podcast format. They can't see your hand gestures, but
I didn't hit the pop filter this time.
At least. That was Josh.
That was me. That was me. Yeah. And I clinked some chips, and that's fine.
Yeah, we're going to get better at this.
Just blame Josh.
Sure.
Eventually.
Yeah, blame me. It's fine. That's fine.
Just blame
me on the Brit.
That was supposed to be the new podcast name, Just Blame Josh.
Yeah. Why not?
Now that we're going, there's just so many good names out there.
I know.
But I like Tabletop Game Talk. We have the Gmail address for it already. So. All right, Josh, why don't you take us out then?
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde with an E. Chris is at Game Master Chris, and Kitty is at Kitten L. Of course, you can always leave a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or BoardGameGeek.com pages. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we talk about role-playing games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.